China's currency falls as the country's imports surge. And is it wise to bet money on catastrophes?
Where do you get the extra return? Where do you get the lower risk? And if you can't understand it, you shouldn't be doing it.
Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Rob Young. Good morning. China's currency fell sharply on Thursday morning. At one point, the renminbi suffered its biggest decline since it was devalued by the central bank in 2015. From Hong Kong, here's the BBC's Andrew Wood.
The renminbi's decline was fast. It lost nearly 1.2% in value against the dollar in just 3 hours of trading in Asia. That is within the limits allowed by the People's Bank of China. And the yuan did recover a bit later in the day. It's now about 0.8% lower and remains near the level it was when the central bank devalued the currency in 2015. Traders seem puzzled by the sudden drop. Unlike the euro and other major currencies, the renminbi has been quite strong against the dollar so far this year. But a Reuters survey of investors suggested that they are turning pessimistic on the prospects for the yuan. Today's rapid slide started around the time Beijing published the latest trade figures. They showed that China's trade surplus narrowed by more than expected, as imports in January increased faster than exports. Also likely contributing to the decline was higher demand for dollars, as people plan trips abroad for the Lunar New Year holiday. For now, though, the yuan still seems strong enough against the dollar to prevent Washington accusing Beijing of deliberately keeping the currency weak to boost exports to the United States. In Hong Kong, I'm the BBC's Andrew Wood for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. A mixed picture for global stocks. In Asia, shares were mostly higher, while those in Europe are lower. Japan's Nikkei closed up 245 points, or 1.13%. Speaking to Parliament, the Bank of Japan's governor said it's still too early to discuss an exit from easy money policies, given consumer inflation is still too far from its 2% target. Today is known as Super Thursday in the UK, but it's nothing to do with sports or elections. It's the day the Bank of England announces its latest interest rate decision, publishes its most recent minutes, and issues an updated forecast for the economy. Rates are still 0.5% in Britain. There's only been one hike since the financial crisis of a decade ago. Karen Ward is from JP Morgan Asset Management in London.
Central banks globally are trying not to unnerve either the economy or markets as they exit these extraordinary unconventional policies. So I think it's very unlikely they provide us with a surprise today.
What about the rest of 2018, though? Will there be any further increases from the Bank of England this year?
The economy is holding up fairly well. We had a fairly robust growth number in the final 3 months of last year. Consumer confidence, employment is all relatively strong. There probably is enough information for them to feel they can continue to raise rates very slowly, very gradually. The difficulty they have is timing, because in the background, the Brexit negotiations are ongoing.
So the Brexit negotiations then between London and Brussels could determine the course of interest rates?
Oh, absolutely. If we get a transition announced sooner rather than later and a clear direction that there will be an ongoing close partnership between the UK and the EU, then the backdrop for the Bank of England and the economy could change quite significantly. We could see businesses more confident about spending and investing. We could see a much higher growth rate, and in which case the Bank of England could be much more confident about normalising its policy.
Karen Ward. In the past few weeks, temperatures have soared in Australia and plunged in the United States. The cost to people, businesses and entire economies can run into billions of dollars. For the past few years, pension funds have been putting money into investments linked to devastating weather events and other catastrophes. But given the changing climate, is that wise? There's an increasingly popular investment product linked to these and other devastating events. They're called catastrophe bonds, and pension funds are putting more and more money into them. Caroline Escott from the Pensions and Lifetime Savings Association in London explains how the bonds work.
They are typically issued by insurers and reinsurers. And when an investor like a pension scheme commits to buying a catastrophe bond, what they are getting is, over typically a 3 to 5 year period, is a regular stream of payments in return for losing their principal and paying out should a particular natural disaster take place.
Those who create catastrophe bonds say they're helping poorer countries buy disaster insurance at a cost they can afford.
My name's Bill Dubinsky. I'm a managing director with Willis Towers Watson Securities. It's particularly tragic where you have uninsured losses where potentially if the price were a little bit lower on the front end, people would have had the protection in place to put their lives back together after a tragic event.
What proportion of them pay out in the end in the sense that the catastrophe that it is linked to occurs?
A very small percentage, and that's really by design. These structures are designed to get triggered, if you will, somewhere between once every 100 years and once every 20 years.
With more extreme rain, wind, and sun, some financial advisors aren't sure catastrophe bonds are the wisest investment. The independent pensions consultant John Ralph is urging investors to be more cautious.
It sounds terribly, terribly, you know, sexy. I've seen, you know, explanations that there's a higher return in relation to the risk or there's greater diversification or all sorts of things. I still don't think that answers the fundamental thing. Can you explain it? What is the magic? Where do you get the extra return? Where do you get the lower risk? And if you can't understand it, you shouldn't be doing it.
John Ralph. And finally, Russia is experiencing incredibly heavy snowfall, 22 inches in some parts. Bad news for ordinary Russians, but the country's wheat farmers, very happy, hope the melting snow will soak the fields, boosting yields. In London, I'm Rob Young with the Market Based Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.